For Radiotopia from PRX, this is The Allusionist. That's Allusionist with an A, not an I. I can't promise illusions. I can only promise little linguistic adventures for you, the listener, with me, Helen Zaltzman. Coming up in today's show, we'll put the pun into punch myself in the head just to make the wordplay stop. To warm up, here's some word history.
And as this is the first episode of the show, let's begin with hello, or hallo, hollo, hollo, depending on which vowel you favour. There are even some outliers who say hillo. Regardless, the term probably started out with the old High German shout of holla or holla, which they used to hurl at ferrymen. This went through various iterations as something you'd bellow at people to get their attention, but the word really got its big break with the invention of the telephone. It was light bulb fan Thomas Edison who endorsed hello as the thing to say when you picked up the phone. The telephone's inventor, Alexander Graham Bell, was keen for people to open with ahoy. It would have made phone conversations a lot more piratical sounding.
And now, on with the show. Towards the end of 2014, some news broke that devastated everyone around me. China was to ban puns.
China has a very rich history of punning.
The language is absolutely full of homophones, words and parts of words that sound like other words. And until now, the people have taken advantage of that in their jokes and idioms and even customs. But the State Administration for Press, Publication, Radio, Film and Television in China has ordered that henceforth all forms of media shall only use literal language. They must strictly only deploy idioms correctly and flush out irregular and inaccurate use of language. There are some fairly persistent mutterings that this move is not to shut down jokes, but subversion and criticism of the government. However, the regulator says that allowing wordplay to continue will cause cultural and linguistic chaos to flourish. Whatever it is, from now on, China is only allowed to deal in single entendre. No more puns. Now, despite my admiration for the principle of free speech, I have to admit that when I heard about this, part of me thought, yeah, you go for it, China. I can't pretend to be a pun fan. I'm not made of stone, I do sometimes emit a few ripe puns myself, and every time I'm on the 432 bus through Tulse Hill and it passes the Thai restaurant Tycoons, I laugh. Inwardly. I don't hate all puns. I just hate nearly all puns. Surely the most important thing about a word is its meaning, whereas that's almost an encumbrance to a pun, which reduces a word down to merely its superficial resemblance to another word. Admittedly, I can try to intellectualise my pun aversion, but I realise it's probably more visceral because I spent my formative years growing up alongside the Pontifex himself, my brother Andy.
I bet Lou Reed's wife couldn't believe it when he broke the news to her that they were going to do this concert. I mean, she must have had to pinch herself.
Andy's a comedian. Here he is, embarking on one of his notorious pun runs on his podcast, The Bugle. The anguish you can hear in the background belongs to his long-suffering co-bugler, John Oliver.
She must have had to pinch herself. Yep. Okay. Concert for dogs, Lou, she said. I know you're avant-garde, but what's the point of that? But Lou Reed soon set her straight. He said, shh, now's a time and a place for complaining. This is a great opportunity for us, dear. Our terrier, we can't bass it up. I'll put a band together and whip it into shape. OK, she said, but make sure it's a cosmopolitan band. Get an English guy on drums and someone from Tehran on rhythm guitars. Hang on, love, I'll just write that down. Pom, Iranian. Anyone else? Yep, for backing vocals, get the lead singer from that influential synth-pop band Kraftwerk and maybe that famous American actress and occasional singer who starred in Moonlighting. OK, German, Shepherd. And on drums, hang on, interrupted Lou Reed, Dax and Duff.
It goes on. For 40 years and counting.
There's a simple joy in the absolutely idiotic wordplay, and that has been true in comedy for thousands of years. Aristophanes had quite a few decent wordplays in his stuff back
really?
In 400 BC.
And were those puns meant to be experienced through reading, or were they meant to be said out loud?
All out loud.
Right.
It's a theatrical performance.
Do you think that is still the best way to deliver a pun?
Yeah, I mean, that was would have been... You're punning to 12,000 people on the side of a hill there, basically.
If you're not conversant with ancient Greek to the point where you can understand every idiom, does that mean you can just miss those puns?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it does if you're not an ancient Greek.
So in 2,000 years' time, your puns could be just wasted. Or they might just take them all at single value.
No, I think you're being very, very premature on that. I mean, they're made to last, Helen. I mean, the sort of puns I do tend to be quite contrived.
We live in a cynical age, John. And, like a German research scientist looking at X-ray scans of people's stomachs in an investigation using barium-coated sausages to see how the digestive system works, we do tend to see the worst in people.
I'm not sure there's other forms of comedy in which you could necessarily achieve the same deluge of quips.
Hmm. Is that one reason, then, why they're popular? Just because they're kind of easy and you get a response?
Yeah, I don't know if they're necessarily easy to write a good one. But, yeah, I guess you can see the craft of it. I guess there's the sort of humour sometimes comes in the obvious contrivance and a slight disbelief in an audience that someone has bothered to make that contrivance. Part of it is, I guess, them becoming more and more contrived as the sequence progresses. Certainly in the puns I do on the Bugle, where, you know, they tend to be, you know, sort of 20 to 40 in a row in rapid succession.
Are you not worried that you're using them all up too fast?
Well, I hope there's not a bottom to that well.
Soon Laurie was ready to go. Hawkeye, do you mind if I tell my friend?
Shame on you.
You know the lady from number 35 who you really don't like? What, Shih Tzu? I wish you wouldn't call her that, dear.
Okay,
it's very rude.
Okay.
And anyway, why don't you like her? Well, because she talks rot while her huge husband scares me. I mean, he's a big old bastard. Big old bastard. No. Last time you told her about one of my gigs, she just talked about it endlessly at work. She really bored her colleagues. They climbed into their car. To go to the airport to Australia. Wow, said Laurie. I've had such a great day. It's only still lunchtime. Hang on, said Lou suddenly. We'd better do some publicity for this gig. Can I borrow $20 for some posters for it? Sure, pay me back next week, replied his wife. And get me a box of chocolates to say thanks. My purse is on the back seat. I'll just ridge back and get it.
How do you feel about the Chinese banning puns?
Where you ban puns, then you will also ban people.
How?
I'm not sure, but it sort of sounds right. I mean, frankly, a government that bans puns is basically saying we don't know what we're doing. This is a desperation measure. It's a panic move against one of the great verbal freedoms known to mankind. And, you know, China is supposedly trying to improve its relations with the West, and yet this is an attack on the very heart of Britishness, really, to ban the pun. It's much easier to go for a wordplay than a genuine expression of emotion. I think, you know, that's a fundamental truth of Britishness, isn't it? It's, you know, one of the most touching wedding speeches I've ever seen, of course, is our own father at your wedding. Generally, the father of the bride speech is very emotional, you know, an explanation of what the daughter means to their father. It's a true expression of one of the greatest forms of human love. But our father chose to go with 15 minutes of puns.
Human love of wordplay.
Which in many ways transcended even the concept of love, of parental love.
How best to describe Dad's speech at my wedding? It was as if someone had turned up his pun setting all the way to annihilate. And yes, I laughed till I cried. We all did. And nearly 4 years later, friends still mention it to me all the time. But none of us seem to be able to remember what he actually said. I vaguely recall a gag about a dowry of cattle, except it wasn't cattle, it was electric kettle, because Dad's mild South African accent renders that vowel ambiguous. Kettle. Kittle. Even though they're a constant presence in the Zaltzman household, almost like an extra awful sibling, Dad's puns are ephemeral. I realise I can't actually remember any.
But you've heard Andy's work, so just imagine where he got it from. This guy.
I find that puns come to me rather than me go to them. It is a case of being receptive. I see funny situations, and by swapping one of the key letters in a phrase for another one, you create a sort of new identity.
So opportunity is everywhere, if you're alive.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. Some days nothing happens, and other days I get a few coming more or less together.
And has this been consistent throughout your life, or have there been periods where...
Yeah, I've always liked messing about with words. I don't make a special effort to be funny. I find funny funny situations. They sort of quick one-liners, yeah, and then you're gone. So if it's a bad pun, you still get a laugh.
And once you've created the pun, how long can you keep it going?
Not for very long. I move on to the next.
He's lying. Some of his puns are bandied around for years. I think some of them are older than I am. Sometimes he claims they get better with age.
When did you first realise you had this gift?
I wouldn't call it a gift. I think it's just an add-on. As a gift, I can't say that it's brought me any sort of material or other benefits.
There could have been benefits if, instead of becoming a sculptor, Dad had pursued a career as, say, a tabloid headline writer, or a cryptic crossword setter, or a composer of cracker jokes.
It just helps the day go by.
Have you considered ever working in some different types of gags than puns?
No. The puns give me enough to go on with.
It's a lifetime's work.
I'm only as good as the next or the last one.
I don't think it's just my dad. I have a theory. I haven't properly scientifically tested it, but in my informal sample group, I've noticed punning grows stronger in men when they become fathers. We know that thousands of physical and psychological switches are thrown in mothers at birth. So in dads, maybe puns? You reckon there's anything to this? Anyway, even God the Father can't resist a pun. The Bible is riddled with them. Though they're probably only funny if you're fluent in Hebrew, Aramaic or ancient Greek. They get lost in translation. Are your children punning yet?
They've occasionally attempted a pun. Or they'll just say something stupid and say, Daddy, was that a pun?
Double meaning is a hard thing to master when you're 6 and 8.
Yes. True. It's not like being a Olympic gymnast. You don't have to be brilliant by the time you're 6.
How is their gymnastics coming along?
Well, they're not going to be Olympic gymnasts.
So I guess it's a good thing they've got the pun gene to fall back on. I mean, they can try to resist it, but it's going to get all of us in the end.
I did think of one the other day that was quite good, but I let it go now. I can't remember it.
Oh, no. Do you write them down?
No. Nothing as elaborate as that.
To think of the ones the world will never hear.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Perhaps there is a fundamental element of the human
fundamental
makeup.
Ellen, please.
Oh, Jesus. Just never ends. That cannot resist puns, even if intellectually he would like to, physically he can't.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's... Well, there is a medical condition, I believe, called Wisselsucht, which is, an unstoppable propensity to make puns.
Really?
Yes.
Is there a cure?
No, I think it's saturation therapy. You just have to, make as many puns as possible.
Yeah, well, let's see how that works out.
So excited about this gig. If it goes well, I want to take the show to dogs all around the world. Well, let's just see how it goes first, love, cautioned his wife. Don't start thinking about an elaborate tour. Elaborate tour? Mm-hmm. Not yet. I mean, it's going to be a logistical challenge anyway. I mean, for a start, wouldn't I have to clean the auditorium? Not after a crowd of dogs has poodle over it. And if any promoter asks you to do a gig for cats, I'd be hesitant. I'll say shun that offer. Suddenly, loose land on the brakes. Cripes! That Indian chef just spilt a load of melted butter on the road.
Oh, yeah?
That was
happened?
Close. Core. Ghee. Viz the last thing I wanted to see. As they pulled into the airport...
No!
As they pulled into the airport, they drove past a textile maker who'd fallen into the icy Hudson River and just climbed out. Look, darling, said Lou Reed. It's a cold and wet weaver. But that was worth the wait. A cold and wet weaver.
This episode of The Illusionist was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Andy Zaltzman, Zach Zaltzman, and Martin Austwick.
This show resides at theallusionist.org, and if you want to chat about words, find Illusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. I'm also tweeting there as Helen Zaltzman. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... Gralloch. Noun. The entrails of a dead deer. Verb. disembowel brackets, a deer that has been shot, close brackets. Try using it in an email today.
New episodes will be out every other week, and puns will be kept to a minimum.
If you're looking for a point in a pun, I think you're probably listening to it wrong.
Although I believe etymologically, pun is from the Latin for point.
Is it?
It has quite fuzzy origins.